I want to talk to you a little bit about the building, just for a second. I'm not gonna take a long time, but you know, as of last week, we owed $62,000 on the building. In a year, we have paid off over $100,000. November 24th, yeah, that's a good thing. Clap. November 24th of last year, we signed the note. It was $170,000. And so in that less than a year's time, we've paid off over $100,000, which is a huge thing. It's exciting. But let me tell you about the building and what this building has allowed us to do. I just want to, just this week, because we have that building, we're able to get product that no other church is able to get. And this week, we were able to load out three churches to help them do ministry in their communities and one rehabilitation center with products to help the men in that program. And because we have this building, we are receiving two more semi-loads this month to help reach people in the community. You know, one of the things that when I started praying about this building and I honestly didn't know what the doors that would be open when we had it finished. You know, we were receiving stuff before the building was finished, but since it's been finished, we've received semi-loads that no one else is getting. And I'm not just saying that. Like, they're calling and saying, we're only offering this to just a few of our people. And the loads that we're going to be starting to get this month, and we're going to receive them until they run out, stop doing them, we're going to be receiving two loads a month, semi-loads a month from Target with products. And I have no idea what the products are going to be. I have no idea. They just said products between $1 and $25. It could be anything. It could be food. It could be non-food. I have no idea. But I just said yes. Anytime Convoy calls, I just say yes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If they called me tomorrow and told me they had a semi-load of, you know, twin-size mattresses, I would just say yes, and then we'd figure out what we're going to do with them. Because the thing is once we say yes, it opens the door for more things. I said yes to Windex this year. We got a whole semi-load of Windex. And then when I said yes, after I said yes, I was like, man, I don't know about this. But then 2 days later, they called me and said, you want a whole semi-load of Hostess products? Yes, I do want donuts. And I tell you this because I want you to understand that what this building is doing is it's impacting our community. But it's also impacting at least 20 other communities in our region of the state. And that's huge. That's huge. And when you're able to meet someone's physical need, it helps you to be able to meet their spiritual need. It's hard to talk to someone about Jesus when their belly's hungry. It's hard for someone to hear about Jesus when they're worried about their hygiene. Because they can't afford something. Because they can't afford laundry detergent. And we've been able to provide that. We've been able to provide it. And it's because God has blessed us. But one of the main reasons that we're receiving some of the things we're doing, we're receiving it because we've been obedient to God, first and foremost. But one of the reasons we're able to receive some of the things we're able to receive is because of that building down there. Because a truck can back up to the dock and we can unload them. And that's one of the requirements for several of the trucks that we've gotten is you had to have a dock and a forklift. We have both. Amen? But as I was talking to James about this a few weeks ago, just about the building itself, and he said something to me. And so I asked him to share it to you this morning, so I'm going to ask him to do that.
Okay, so a few weeks ago, Joe and I were talking out in the foyer, and we was talking about the building, and, you know, I was on the deacon board whenever we decided to build this building. We knew we were going to go into debt, and that was not something we took on lightly, because at that point, the church was out of debt and had been for a long time. So a lot of you weren't here the last time we added on to the church, and we went into debt, but after that, the years following that, we were working very hard to get out of debt, and I know we did this in my family, and I think a lot of other people. I don't know that it was a corporate effort in the church to everybody give every paycheck. You're going to, you know, ask God what he wants you to give every paycheck. I know we did that, and several other people did. I would love to see this church do that again until this $62,000 is paid off. Everybody, just spend the next couple of weeks talking to God, and just whatever number he gives you out of your paycheck, that's what you should give. He's already given me a number. It's not as high as I was fearing it would be. I'm always scared when I go to God like that, and I'm like, okay, God, just give me a number. Whatever it is, I'll do it. And I was like, oh, please. But it was one that I can manage. And so, he may ask you for a big amount. He may ask you for a little, or he may not ask you for anything, you know. But because he doesn't need your money, he needs your obedience. And so, and that's basically the gist of what we talked about.
It's about instant obedience. That's the thing. If God tells you to do something and you sit back and like, I don't know about that. The moment you say yes, it gets easier, I promise. Well, not, I wouldn't say that it gets easier, but I would say, you know, you get that peace. The thing about if you hold on and you wait on obedience when God asks you to do something is the devil has time to talk to you about it and talk you out of it, being obedient. And the thing is we need to be obedient to what God is asking us to do. My prayer this whole year has been that as a church that we would get out of debt, but as the church got out of debt, that we as individual families in the building would also get out of debt. And we're seeing that happen. And so I'm just believing that God is going to get this, that through us, that the $62,000 is going to be paid off quickly. But we'll move on. The last couple of weeks, I've been really thinking about expectations. And with different things we have had going on in the church and in my own life, I've thought about the expectations that I, and I've made the statement countless times in the last few months, I expected something different. I expected something different, or I didn't expect that. Have you noticed that your expectations can alter your view of things? When your expectations are high, and whatever it is that they're high on, and it doesn't live up to what your expectations are, you can get disappointed, right? When your expectations are low, and whatever it is exceeds your expectations, you have like this happy. Listen to me. I'm not telling you to lower your expectations so you can be happy. That's not what I'm saying. But expectations or lack thereof will also cause you to or not to do or try things. Our expectations dictate how we respond and react to things. I think the same thing applies to expectations in our spiritual life, with our faith. There are times that we expect God to show up, and there are a few times when we just go through the motions, and we don't expect at all. But our expectations, what we expect, dictates how we respond sometimes. So I had a sales rep come by this feed store earlier this week and gave me a bag, and it had some candy in it. I didn't even look at the candy, but Manasseh was up there with me Friday when we got back from Nashville. He was up there with me, and he asked me if he could have some, and so I gave it. It was a kiss, like a Hershey's kiss, and I gave it to him, and he ate it. I thought I'd given it to him, and I'd walked over to do something else, and then he came up with one and gave it to me, and he said, I got this one for you. Well, I was thinking it was a Hershey's Kiss. I threw it in my mouth, and it was a cherry Hershey's Kiss. And I immediately, he just was smiling because he already knew. And I was, I said, that was not what I was expecting. That doesn't taste what I was expecting. He said, I spit mine out. I was like, thanks. Thanks for not telling me. But, you know, when you're expecting a chocolate Hershey's Kiss and you bite into something that's not chocolate and you're like, I'm not a fan of cherry either. So that was just even more like, just whoever decided to put cherry in chocolate, is just, they need to be, I don't know, something needs to happen to them. They're probably already dead, but I... John chapter 5, verse 1 tells a story about some expectations that were changed. And it says in verse 1 of chapter 5, it says, "Afterward, Jesus returned to Jerusalem from one of the Jewish holy days. Inside the city near the sheep gate was the pool of Bethesda with five covered porches. Crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. Crowds of them. One of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him and knew he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, 'Would you like to get well?' And his response was, 'I can't, sir. For I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me.' 'I can't, sir.' This guy has been laying by the pool for 38 years. I'm sure when he got there, his hopes were high, right? He expected to make it into the pool. He expected to get healed. These people were crowded around this pool because they believed that the angel of the Lord would come and stir the water, and if they were the first one in the pool, they would get their healing, and if not, they didn't. And so people would stay and sit and lay and walk and stay hang around this pool so that they could receive their healing. And so this guy has been sitting here for 38 years. He wasn't, the way that it reads, he wasn't just a little kid and was sick his whole life. At some point, he became paralyzed. For 38 years, he laid by that pool. And I'm sure that when he got there, when he whatever happened that caused him to be paralyzed, I'm sure he said, "If y'all can get me to the pool of Bethesda, and I can be get in the water, I can be healed." And I'm sure when he got there, that he had family and friends that were around him and there, and they were helping him. And I'm sure that a few days in, they saw that every time the water was stirred, they couldn't get him down there fast enough. And over time, those family and friends left him. Because they had lives to live and they had things to do. And they didn't have time to be there with this guy. And so slowly, one by one, they all left. And so here he is alone and hopeless. The same guy who was full of hope and expectations 38 years earlier is now, 38 years later, bitter and has no expectations, is feeling hopeless of anything in his life ever changing. I can't get well. I can't get well. No matter what I try or what I do, I can't get well. Unfortunately, we can end up just like this guy. We can be full of expectations, full of hope and faith, and one miscue happens. One thing doesn't work out, and we're riding the hopeless bus. The people we are hanging out with didn't help much. I mean, he's hanging out with some people that aren't giving him any hope. Because in verse 3 it says, crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. Crowds of sick people. Guess what? Sick people can't help sick people. They don't want to help the other guy get in the pool first because they'll miss out. Who you surround yourself with matters. Crowds of sick people. The problem is these crowds of sick people are in the same boat our friend is in. No one left to help them in. The one that got in the pool was good to go and didn't hang around there anymore. It was the crowds of sick people, not the crowds of the well. Don't get me wrong. I want the sick people to come in, and I'm going to pray, and I'm going to believe that God is going to heal them and change their lives, and we're going to see miracles because this is a house of miracles. And when I think about the crowds of sick people, though, it makes me realize that the man answered the way he did because for 38 years, probably he had been hearing the same murmur. It's hopeless. It's over. We have no one to help us to the water. We're never going to get any better because someone always beats us to the water. They didn't form a line and, well, it's just a little bit longer and you'll get to go in, Johnny. No, it was the first one in. It was all bets are off. We don't have any friends at that moment. Right? There's no friends at an auction, right, Walker? No friends at an auction. And in this moment, there's no friends. No friends. Jesus sees him in verse 5, or verse 6, it says, when Jesus saw him and knew that he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, would you like to get well? I can't, the sick man said, for I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me. He had been hanging with the sick people, the negative Nancys, the people who lost hope because unexpected circumstances, who became bitter, the ones who couldn't see past what was right in front of them, the people who can tell you everything that's wrong but not interested in trying to fix what's wrong. Ever been around those people? They can tell you everything that is wrong, but they're not interested in being the solution. The people who would find the negative and win in $1 million. I won $1 million, but I had to give $100,000 in taxes. And they dwell on the $100,000 they had to give away than the $900,000 they got to keep. They stubbed their toe and now they're cutting off their whole leg. Because there's no... The biggest challenge between us and whether we expect or not is not if we believe or not. It's not even a faith issue. It's a buzzard issue. Buzzards feed on death and dying things. And spiritual buzzards don't want you to expect. Because when you expect, they have nothing to feed on. There's nothing that they can do to nitpick, trying to cause your expectations to waver. They cause division. The first thing that a buzzard eats is the eyes, because if it can distort the vision, they can destroy the hope. In Genesis, Abraham had an experience with buzzards. In Genesis 15, verse 7, it says, then the Lord told him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land as your possession. But Abraham replied, O sovereign Lord, how can I be sure that I will actually possess it? And the Lord told him, bring me a 3-year-old heifer, a 3-year-old female goat, and a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. So Abraham presented all of these things to him and killed them. Then he cut each animal down the middle and laid them in halves side by side. He did not ever, however, cut the birds in half. And some vultures, some buzzards, swooped down to eat the carcasses, but Abraham chased them away, because this was a moment that if I don't chase these buzzards away, I'm not going to get the possession, the promise that God has for me. Abram was struggling with expectations, with faith, with hope. But God says, do this and wait. But the vultures, the buzzards swooped down. And they were attacking the gift, the promise. He had to chase them away. Sometimes we have to chase some people away in order to receive the promise that God has for us. I don't want negative people hanging around me. I don't necessarily want joy pumpers either. But I certainly don't want negative Nancys. And I've ran into plenty of those. I've ran into them here. We would start to do something or get something. How are we ever going to get rid of that? The same way that we've gotten rid of everything else. We'll figure it out. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're expecting God to do. There are going to be naysayers. There are going to be buzzards that will tell you all the reasons it can't and won't happen. Your prodigals will never come home because they will never come to the Lord because of this or that or the other. Your marriage will never get better. Your spouse will never change. It's hopeless. You're never going to be healed. You're too far gone. The doctor said it won't happen. The woman with the issue of blood was told by the doctors, there's nothing more we can do. You might as well stop wasting your money and your time. But she said, if I can just press through the crowd and touch the hem of his garment, then I'll be healed. And she crawled on her hands and knees to touch the hem of Jesus' garment. And Jesus, in the midst of a crowd, David said, someone touched me. And he turned around and he looked at that woman and said, your faith has healed you. There will be people and there will be naysayers and there will be people who will tell you why it won't happen or can't happen. But Jesus is saying, I got it. The buzzards tell her not to waste her time or money any longer, but Jesus said, you're healed. I think about blind Bartimaeus. The people are trying to shut him down. He's crying out, Son of David, have mercy on me. And the people are telling him, be quiet. Stop bothering him. And then Jesus looks at him and says, what can I do for you? And he says, I just want to see. And Jesus heals him. He doesn't even spit on his eyes. The buzzards told him not to bother the teacher. But the teacher said, you're healed. Verse 7 of chapter 5 says, the man said, I can't. I can't, the sick man said. Or I have no one to put me into the water when the pool bubbles. The buzzards told him, no one will ever help you. You're never going to make it into the pool. You might as well stay here with us. When David went to face Goliath, the buzzards told him he wasn't big enough, strong enough, smart enough. He didn't know the battle enough. Yet he defeated the giant. The man's response is the same that we give. We can't because of this or that. I can't go to the altar. What will people think? I can't be vulnerable with people. They'll hurt me. I can't be honest with people. They'll think I'm crazy. Statistically, it's impossible. Mark 9:23 says, what do you mean? This is Jesus speaking. What do you mean, if I can? Anything is possible if a person believes. In Mark chapter 10, Jesus looked at them and intently and said, humanly speaking, it is impossible. But not with God. Everything is possible with God. We look at situations and we decide in our mind if it's possible or impossible. And we don't only just look at our situations, we look at other people's situations. I don't know how many times people have told me I can't do what God has told me to do. Well, maybe you can't because he didn't ask you, but he asked me, so I think I can. In 1939, George Danson enrolled as a graduate student at the University of California, Berkeley, studying statistics under Polish-born professor Jerzy Niemann. At the beginning of a class session, Dr. Niemann had chalked two examples of famously unsolved problems on the blackboard, and George happened to arrive late to class, and so he missed the disclaimer that they were unsolvable. He thought the problems were their homework assignment, so he transcribed them into his notebook, went to work, and it took a little longer than he anticipated, but George Danson ultimately solved both of them. And on a Sunday morning, 6 weeks later, the ecstatic doctor even knocked on George's front door to share the news. George actually apologized, thinking that he had turned the assignment in late. But that's when Dr. Neiman informed him he had solved two of the statistics' unsolvable problems. See, George didn't know that the problems were unsolvable. Had he been told that, he probably wouldn't have even tried. However, he thought that this is homework, therefore, there must be an answer. He had expectations of this being solvable because he didn't know it couldn't be solved. It was a matter of expectations. When God speaks and asks us to do things, the instant obedience is key. Because if we think about it, we'll find out and figure out why it's impossible. December of last year, it was instant. Because I knew if I waited to tell the board what I was going to do with giving up my salary for the year, that I wouldn't do it. Instant obedience is key. God's taking care of me. And I haven't missed anything. I've not been worried. My wife, on the other hand, has been. Yeah, she's somewhere else now. She'd be okay. My mom is worried about her, and I'm not worried at all. And neither is Chelsea. God's going to take care of her. John 5:8 says, Jesus told him, stand up. After this guy says, I can't, Jesus says, oh, yes, you can. Stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. Instantly, the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. But this miracle happened on the Sabbath, so the Jewish leaders objected. They said to the man who was cured, you can't work on the Sabbath. The law doesn't allow you to carry your sleeping mat. But he replied, the man who healed me told me, pick up your mat and walk. The man didn't expect, yet Jesus still healed him, and immediately the man met buzzards, opposition. Because when God moves and heals the dead and dying, it gives hope to the hopeless situations. The buzzards have nothing to feed on. You can't be healed. It's the Sabbath. Get back, lay back down on your mat. Wait till tomorrow. I want us to expect God to move. What if this guy, when Jesus said, pick up your mat and walk, would have said, but Jesus, it's the Sabbath, I can't do that. Oh, I'm not in church, so God can't move in my life. I got to wait till Sunday. I got to wait till Sunday to go to the altar. I got to wait till Sunday to pray. I got to wait till Sunday before I can do that. And what was the point of Jesus dying on the cross so the temple veil would be split down the middle so that we could enter the Holy of Holies if we can only do it on Sunday? That is the most ridiculous thing ever. You can talk to God anytime, anywhere. It was about instant obedience. The guy could have sat there and said, well, today's the Sabbath. If I pick up my mat, I'm sinning. But this guy told me, if I pick up my mat, I can be healed. Instant obedience. Pick up your mat and walk. Okay. And he rolls it up and he gets up and he's walking around. And immediately people are like, you can't do that. You can't be healed today. Go lay back down until tomorrow. I want us to expect God to move no matter where we are or what we're doing. I want us to expect this building to be paid off. I want us to expect miracles, signs, and healings, and lives to be changed every time we walk through the doors. But I don't want us to just expect it when we're here. I want us to expect us to come into contact with people that we're able to pray for and they're healed. That we're able to pray for and miracles happen. That we're able to pray for and the Holy Spirit changes their lives. Not just inside the building, outside the building. Because if all we're ever doing is waiting for them to come here, we may not see it. But if God speaks to us, we need to be obedient to do it instantly, Caleb. My desire and prayer for this year, and it's going to continue, has been for us to see miracles, signs, healings, and lives to be changed. My other prayer has been that the building will be paid off and that families in the church will be out of debt. What giant are you facing? What buzzard are you facing that's telling you and that you can't, that you need to drive away like Abram? And expect. Or are you going to let them win? What's the hopeless situation that you can't seem to find the answer to? This guy was hopeless. I'm never going to be healed. And Jesus said, pick up your mat and walk. What hopeless situation are you facing today that you need to have expectations that God will change? Ask everyone that would to stand to your feet. Lord, I just thank you for today. I thank you once again for the opportunity you've given us to gather in your presence. Lord, I pray this morning that you increase our expectations, that you do something in our life that changes us forever. Lord, if there are people in this room that are facing hopeless situations, Lord, I pray that today you change them. That you meet them where they are and change them forever. Give them hope this morning. Give them hope this morning. Maybe you're here this morning and you are facing a hopeless situation. Maybe you're facing a situation where you don't know how you're going to get through it, or you don't know how you're going to make it by. And you say, this morning, I need hope. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you. I want to invite you to come. Say, I got a situation. I got some circumstances in my life, and I don't know what's going to happen, but I need hope this morning. I want to invite you to come. Maybe it's a healing in your body that you need. Maybe it's a financial situation that you need God to show up in. Maybe it's a family member that you've been praying for a long time and you need God to move. I want to invite you to come. I want to believe with you. I want to believe with you. Don't let pride and what other people think hold you back. Maybe you just need to feel God's presence this morning. You say, I just need God to move in my life. Maybe there's something that He's been asking you to do and you've been holding out and giving all the excuses of why you can't do it. And this morning you say, I'm ready to be obedient. I need help, though, to get there. I want to invite you to come. I want to pray with you and believe with you. Lord, I just thank you right now. I thank you for the ones that are here, and I thank you for the ones that are responding. Lord, I believe that there are some more, and Lord, I pray that you begin to move in the seats and you begin to touch their lives even now. Lord, that you begin to move in people's lives today, God, and you change them today, Lord. Lord, I pray that when we leave this place, we're different than when we came in. that we have an expectation that's greater than when we came in. If you feel led to come and pray around this altar, feel free to do so. If you feel led to come and pray for the ones that are here, feel free to do so.